You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Neil Williams. Neil.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How was your Father's Day?
Father's Day was great. Got to spend time with family, and one son is home, so got to spend some time with him, and we had a good Father's Day. So, but sounds like you were on the ground. So let's talk about your Father's Day. It sounded like you had some really exciting things going.
Yeah, let me turn this light on real fast. Our Father's Day was full of adrenaline. My dad has, a couple years ago, he started this fundraiser for Alzheimer's because we lost his mother some years back to Alzheimer's. And he met a lady who had lost her husband to the disease, and they got to talking and decided they wanted to do a fundraiser. So they've done a couple things, and what they decided to do mostly a couple years ago was they decided to go skydiving. She wanted to go skydiving. He said, well, I'll do that with you. And they turned it into a fundraiser. So this year they decided to do it on Father's Day. So we got to do that as a Father's Day and also as this fundraiser, raising money to fight Alzheimer's research and stuff like that. So that was exciting. And so we jumped out of a plane yesterday, and that's what we did for Father's Day. Yeah.
Did your brother go too? Did your brother go too? Or
no, my brother could not make it. He is a father himself, and he's got three crazy kids, a ranch, and too much responsibility.
Wow.
So he was doing that, enjoying Father's Day with his family. But he's been with us twice before.
Okay.
So this was my third, my dad's fourth time. But I don't think we've done it on Father's Day before that I remember.
What is it like to jump out of a plane? What does that feel like?
So everyone has their, everyone who's willing to do such a thing has their favorite part. And so there's the plane ride is pretty nerve wracking because it's real noisy. It's a small plane and the door's open most of the time. So you're just climbing up, looking out of this door, watching yourself get higher and higher. And it's, I think reality sets in where you're like, well, why am I doing this? And is this really a good idea? But I've broken through that barrier so many times in my life that this is probably one of the safer things I've chosen to do. But my favorite part is, so you go to the door and your feet are on the edge of the plane and you lean out, you lean back in, and then you just fall out. And my favorite part is actually the jump, like leaving the plane, because you just are weightless. And so then you fall for about a minute, I think. I think it's a minute. You go up to 14,000 feet. You jump to, and you pull the chute at 6,000. So you fall about 8,000 feet, just free falling. And you're falling at about 120 miles per hour. So it's fast. But I don't know. It's freeing, but at the same time, there's the scariest thing about it is being so alone in the sky and just recognizing that if that chute doesn't open, then what? But yeah, so some people like the jump. Some people like the free fall where you're flying. And I think when you pull the chute, it's a nice ride down. I mean, it's beautiful. You can see everything, and you just get to coast and kind of do a bunch of little maneuvers and stuff. It's a good time.
It's awesome.
As long as you're the type of person who's willing to do such a thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I just haven't gotten around to that yet.
Would you?
I might.
It's pretty fun.
I'm more apt to do that now than I was maybe 20 years ago, interestingly.
Yeah, I think my dad's first one was at 60.
Yeah.
And it started, my brother called me. My brother and I have talked about doing this for years. And so my brother called me a couple years ago, 3 years ago, and he said, hey, my birthday is coming up. Do you want to go skydive? We've talked about it. You want to do it for my birthday? I said, yeah. And so we were talking to my dad about a month later, and he caught wind of it. And he said, y'all are going skydiving? I said, yeah. He goes, I want to go. And we're like, okay. I said, well, come on then. And he was probably the most excited and had the most fun out of all three of us. So it was kind of funny because I don't know that we even considered whether he would want to. I didn't think he would want to do that, but he was all for it. Now he's been more times than both of us. So
that's excellent. That's excellent. Yeah. The adrenaline, family bonding. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Had a good
time. Yeah. All three of us have gone our respective paths, and each of us have had some close calls and seen things. And I think we have all reached a point in different ways where this kind of thing is more fun than it is scary.
Right.
You know, so.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah, well, it's a good time.
I mean, that's good stuff, man. You hear thunder and lightning on my end. There's a storm. I don't know if it's storming where you are, but it literally is thundering and lightning. I thought we were over that, but I guess.
I heard there's going to be scatter. It's just windy here, but you can tell it's moving. Yeah. So I don't know.
I'll hear a boom or whatever. It's on the same. So
hopefully it doesn't take us out.
Nah, I don't think it will, but it could be a little noisy. So, all right. Well, back to recovery concepts, aspects of recovery, right? Mm-hmm. Seeing some of your notes here, very good stuff. And usually we work up to acceptance. You have it as a first thing, you know, like in the stages of grief, you have denial, depression, anger, bargaining, and then you have acceptance. But you went right for the acceptance thing first here on the list.
Yeah. The other day I follow this guy and I've met him. He's a real cool guy. Have you ever heard of a guy named Damon West?
Yes, heard of him. Yes.
Damon West has a remarkable story. He's from this area. He played football at North Texas.
Right.
And he's not from this area. He's from Beaumont or Port Arthur from Houston.
Golden Triangle.
So you should know.
Yeah.
That's your stomping grounds, man.
That's it, baby.
And Damon was sentenced to life in prison. And he is now, long story short, this guy – similar to me, he has a history of drug abuse and stuff like that. Received a pretty stiff sentence. He didn't get life, but he got, I think it's 30 to 40 years where it's considered life, which if you're an adult, you get 40 years, that's your life.
Right.
So, but he changed his direction at such a magnitude that he made parole, and now what he's done, he's written some books with John Gordon. I don't know if you know anything about John Gordon, but he's been a part of a ton of books, and John Gordon is just a super cool guy, really positive presence, and has some ties to Clemson. Anyways, some cool stuff. He wrote a book called The Change Agent stuff. So I follow him, and the other day I was reading, and he it's just a small post, and it's talking about acceptance leads to everything good in his life. And I started thinking about it, and really, whether it's recovery or not, if we don't practice acceptance, I don't know how I would get to a place of peace or happiness in any regard. I really don't. And it's talked about so much in recovery because guys like me who are alcoholics or addicts are so stubborn, and we push back against everything. And we have, a lot of us have control issues. And so it's just a very common characteristic or personality trait for those of us who are addicts and alcoholics that acceptance has to be a focal point. But when you think about it, who doesn't? Because in acceptance, meaning life on life's terms, because bad things are going to happen. So if we're not practicing acceptance, how are you going to handle when bad things happen?
Everything will be an unmanageability then at that point.
Right. Right. Think about relationships, personalities. Am I going to change everybody I meet just because I don't like it, or it doesn't suit my, or it doesn't fit my plan, you know, which I've tried to do that.
I thought you were going to put principles before personalities, but that's a different show.
Yeah, that's that's a huge one too. But and that ties into, I mean, you've got to just let people be people.
Live and let live, just like this. That's another one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Live and let live.
It's just, and what I see what I wrote down, acceptance is essential to living a happy life. How can we position ourselves to influence the life we live as much as possible in order to minimize the frequency we must accept unwanted situations?
All right. Look, in some of those unwanted situations, I mean, we have enough free will to make choices in our lives that maybe we can avoid. We can avoid some of those unwanted situations, but there's always going to be, to some degree, our resilience and our ability to deal with unwanted situations that happen because of life, right? Getting back to the school.
Yeah, because you hear people say, you make your own luck. You don't hear that?
I hear it, yeah.
Well, hold on. You have thoughts about it.
I swear, lightning crashed out there. I didn't make, look, at the point, I didn't make that. You know what I mean? If that lightning literally struck here, okay.
Doesn't apply to everything. Obviously not the weather. But people who say, people who act like if they all of a sudden lose their job and they have no idea what to do and they just let everything fall apart, to act as if though that just all happened to you and you could have done nothing, absolutely nothing to be prepared or even have an idea of what direction you would go. Right. To assume that you had no role in that is kind of silly.
Well, it's kind of a victim stance then, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And who? I don't know any. I don't know any. And there's a song. One of my favorite bands, City in Color, they have this song that I really like. And it says, to the victim go the spoils, is what he says in the song. And it just always resonates with me. And I think it was because the time of my life when I heard that song. And there's just no other way around it. If you want to play the victim, if you want to act as if though you could have done nothing, then you'll get that. You'll get nothing. And you'll get the short end of the stick.
Right. But is it more important for me to be blameless or is it more difficult for me to take responsibility for what I can do or could have done or can do now? You know what I mean? And
exactly.
For many people, it's a lot harder to take responsibility. It's easier to point the finger and say, there's nothing I could have done, you know, because you don't want to be at fault, you know?
Yeah. That is really hard. I can think of a lot of times where I just didn't want to be the one responsible. I didn't want to own that. You know, it didn't feel right. I didn't ask for that. I didn't feel like I was earning that. Why? But what are your options is the real question. Yeah. What are your options? And you could, if you really want to, you can sit around and wait for someone to come save you. But how long are you going to wait?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I just think that there's a lot of things we can do to set ourselves up for, to kind of prepare ourselves for when bad things happen, because bad things are going to happen. It's a fact.
Yeah. And I usually, you know, in the past when bad things have happened, I've tried to reframe it. So one analogy that I try to use is, you know, old school kind of a Christian, I'm going through the refiner's fire type of thing, right? Because every time you're put into the fire and pulled back out, you're more in the image, you know, closer to the image of God or whatever, by through the test and the trial of the fire. Okay. So that's one analogy. Just like with gold and precious metal, that type of thing. So that's kind of, it's bad fire, but it's good fire, if that makes sense.
So mm-hmm.
The next one that I have used personally is the rose bush. And I always consider that, you know, when you prune the rose bush or crepe myrtles, man, crepe myrtle, that is actually a Texas example, right? You cut those
got in the yard.
Right. But you cut those things down in January. I mean, you don't cut them down, but you shave them. I mean, you prune them. You clear the foliage off those things. Why? So when the summer comes, they can be in full bloom, right? So the pruning actually allows the growth, right? Mm-hmm. So in those times where stuff has happened, right, I can be the victim, or I can try to maybe see it as the refiner fire or the pruning of the bush. That then, because there have been times in my life where I got my butt handed to me or whatever, but many of those times I came out better.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you something. Are there things that you've done to position yourself so that when something happens, you have an almost immediate automatic response to how to keep moving? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it pushes you to a reset.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the best answer I have for that is with work. I have a stable foundation, and one of my revenue streams is pretty damn stable.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't what you're looking for, but I'm going to go with it.
No, I'm looking for whatever works for you.
Yeah. So there's this revenue stream I have, and we'll call it Job A. Now, I'm self-employed now because I've retired from the government. But in Job A has just been a good job. It's steady and it's there, you know. But I've been known to dabble into other projects, right?
Yes.
And so And so, like in 2018, I was involved in a project for 4 years, and it came to an end, you know. I had to do the whole thing. Was it my fault? Was it their fault? Am I the victim? And, you know, all this other stuff. But at the end of the day, it really didn't matter. I had to compensate for that loss. All right. So there was good old faithful job A, you know, as the baseline. Now, look, I had to turn around and pivot and say, okay, what did I learn from this? What do I have in my repertoire bag or whatever that I can use to benefit from the next experience or whatever? And so, and this is all easier said than done in that first moment, you know, a week, a month, 2 months, 3 months, you get more clarity. You're starting to kind of grieve the loss of whatever that was that you were in, but hopefully you don't get stuck in a poor me or victim stance or whatever, and then kind of evaluate what do I have? You know what I mean? Like, what do I have? You know, do I have this? Do I have that? Job A, a savings, a family. You know, what do I have? You know, what's around me? What's, you know? And the other thing is, pay attention to the resources that you have. And oftentimes people have way more resources available to them than they think they have.
Absolutely. I could not agree with that more. Man,
I'll put this into perspective. So on Father's Day, somebody sent me a text, Happy Father's Day. Now, usually I'm busy. I don't, you know, or if I'm in a bad mood, I'll be like, whatever. But on this particular Father's Day, I decided, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go through all my texts that I've received. And if the person's a dad or, you know what I mean, somebody I know that's a dad or whatever, I'm going to wish them Happy Father's Day by text. And you could just, you know, it sounds like a small thing, but I really didn't think I had that many friends or people that are friend eligible. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's real.
And I kind of fashioned myself as this loner. Well, at least I live that way. Anyway, but well, I don't live alone, but you know what I'm saying?
No, I know.
Friend wise, I don't engage in a lot of friendship behaviors. And I'll be damned. I mean, I looked at that text list. There's like, I mean, for me, it was like 30 dudes, like grown ass men, 30,
yeah,
like solid 30. I mean, these were not reach dudes. Your dad was one of them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, dang, you know, there really is no excuse for me not to have a male friendship with a dude.
Right.
Near my age, you know what I mean? Near my age, yeah, or whatever. Because there's about 30 dudes right there. And it was staggering to me to see that. I know I've gotten off point, so.
No, but that's a good point. Because it's really important for us to slow down and recognize what we have available. Yeah. And what we have, I don't even know if the right word would be available. It's because these are gifts and these are provisions and they don't just come from nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And our inability to recognize how many things we have at our disposal is astounding to me at times. It's incredible to me how if I get in the right negative mindset, I say the right, I mean,
right,
that sweet spot of negativity to where I'm like, I've got nobody and there's nowhere to turn and I am just completely effed and I'm going to lose my house and what the hell am I going to do? And that's so far from the truth. Like, there's so much that we could do and so many things right there within arm's length, especially. All you had to do was sit there and give it the time and attention. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow.
And truth be told, and I'm fine, but truth be told, if I was in a funk or whatever, probably I could have reached out to 15 of those 30 in a meaningful way. I could have reached out, hey, what's going on up here? I talked, you know what I mean? So
yeah. And I have this struggle with, because of the kind of folks that I work with, and I love doing it, by the way. I work with guys who come from the situation where I was several years ago, coming from a tough spot where we put ourselves in a lot of trouble and our options are fewer than most. And so getting a job is more challenging than it would be for your average person. Relationships are much more slim because we've pushed a lot of people away. I'm isolated. And these guys often tell me, Neil, I can't get a job. I can't get a job. Like, okay, why? Why can't you get a job? I don't have a degree. I'm a convicted felon. Like, is that really why you can't get a job? Or are you telling yourself you can't get a job and you've convinced yourself you can't? Because I am also a convicted felon. I also do not have a college degree and I'm living well. And I had a job immediately almost when I got out, and it wasn't a great one, but it was a job. Mm-hmm. And I had it because I sought it. Mm-hmm. I sought that job, and I did not, there, no wasn't an option. Mm-hmm. You know, if this person said no, on to the next.
Exactly.
Until someone said, I'll give you a job. That's all there is to it. And that should be the case with everything in life. Why are we accepting no?
Exactly.
Of course, in the right environment, no means no. Don't ever forget that. But I'm just saying, no in this situation is not okay.
Right.
So the next point is we control the things within our control, which is what we've been talking about.
That's right.
Your attitude is one. You always have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You choose the people in your life, what kind of people they are, and you choose your behavior, your daily actions. Like, what actions do you take daily? And I was asking you, if there's a way you position yourself and, you know, you have that solid revenue stream for your career. For me, I'll answer it a little bit differently. Rather than business side of things, when I have something happen that really rocks my world, which it happens, I'll say, maybe once a year, once every couple of years, or maybe twice a year. So something happens of such magnitude that you just get shook and you're like, okay, am I going the wrong direction completely?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there are things that are the non-negotiables that are going to happen every day. I'm going to wake up. I'm going to drink my protein shake. I'm going to pray. I'm going to read my devotional. I'm going to get centered. I'm going to stretch. I'm going to exercise. These things are non-negotiable. I'm going to talk to my sponsor, and not because I have to, because we have a good relationship and I enjoy it. And I need to talk to another alcoholic or addict in recovery every day. It's something I need to do because we both suffer from the same screwy thinking. And we need to bounce stuff off each other and make sure we're not losing our damn minds. And so those things are happening. And I talk to my family. I talk to these things that are happening every day, no matter what. So that even when I lose all focus, there's a center that keeps me grounded and I'm at least moving. Because you can't just stop.
No.
Thoughts on that?
I love that. Talk about a great Maslow hierarchy of needs baseline that continues regardless if you're high or low. Like you said, you're still going to wake up. You're still going to pray. You're still going to protein shake, you know, and talk to family, talk to someone in recovery, talk to your sponsor. And I think that's fantastic. And sometimes, just going back to that center, something will happen that, you know, gets you on another path or whatever. Mm-hmm. I gotta tell you something that's kind of funny.
Okay.
So I had this opportunity. I'll say it this way. Because I took a chance and I was assertive. Did I already talk about the whole Dana White thing on here?
No.
Okay.
No, people need to know.
Okay, so anyway, I was able to get into a position, I stumbled into a position that I was able to talk to the president of UFC.
Which, by the way, is not easy to do.
No.
I can't just DM Dana White.
Now, Joe Rogan is harder, actually, than Dana White. That guy is.
I believe that.
That guy is so hard to get hold of. Anyway, so Dana White's the president of UFC, kind of a rough and tumble guy.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. He is. I had my boys with me, both of them, and they can attest to this. And we're in the VIP suite before the fights begin with Dana, and he asks me a question about an aspect of his business. Okay. Small aspect of his business. But he asked me, and I turn around and I say, well, you know what, Dana? It fucking sucked. Oh, sorry. It effing sucked. And he got up. Everybody's butt was puckering. General counsel was there. The owners, Endeavor guys were, everybody's like, who is this guy? And I told him, I said, here's why. You know, this happened. You know, I told him the facts. I said, and you can't change the facts. And then he got his personal assistant over there, and he ends up putting me ringside three chairs from Rogan as my reward. And he said to me, he goes, you're the only MF-er that would stand up to me because I am who I am. Sometimes people won't tell me the truth. And you just
how frustrating would that be?
Yeah. And for I real? Told him, and here am I. What do I have to lose?
Right.
Right? I mean, I'm there.
You kicked out of the suite at most.
I have job A in my back pocket, baby. I'm king. Just kidding. But you know what? Now I text him about once every other day. He's asked me, a couple things. We're going to see a fighter here on the show in a few weeks. That I'm developing a coaching relationship with, if I wanted to, I could. I'm not going to, unless something happens on their end. But I'm not going to parlay that into some sort of a job or anything. Nothing like that. But because I was at the right place at the right time, and I was unabashedly truthful, and now, of course, one of my sons he kind of gets it. He kind of steps off of he'll jump out of the plane without the parachute kind of kid. But the other one, but the other one was just kind of shocked, and I'm like, yeah, man, this, when you're assertive like that, it can bring great rewards. It could have brought strife, but anyway, giving somebody that honest feedback, I just knew he needed to hear it like that too. I just knew he needed to hear it. You know what I mean? I just kind of knew that everybody around him is used to saying yes and everything is wonderful and whatever else. And so one of the subdirectors, right, in the organization is in contact. Is everything fine? Is everything good, Mr. Cameron? Did you find, tell us your experience this time. And man, they made the corrections and they did what they need to do. And then, on this last fight, I identified more feedback for them, right? Some in their control, some not. We're working on that right now, so it's pretty funny. I'm this undercover boss type of thing in some respects. I'm not the boss, but the undercover piece, you know, representing. Right. So it's been a lot of fun, and I'm learning more about fight contracts and what agents do, and six fight versus a four fight contract, and you know, some of the inner workings, I guess, of that. It's fascinating, mm-hmm. you know, fascinating. Anyway, and I would not be there had I not dropped the F. I shouldn't say that. That's so tacky. But had I not given that level of feedback. But you know what? When you do that with somebody, and I don't, and I kind of half apologize, and I kind of did, but you know, I did apologize for my rudeness in front of those. I mean, billionaires, Neil. Billionaires. You know, I apologize. He's, no, man, don't apologize. That's what I needed to hear. You speak my language. Da, da, da. I'm like, okay, I thought so. But I do want to apologize for the vulgarity of it all. But anyway, so it's just, you know, it's funny. But one thing, you know, could possibly change my life forever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
In a good way.
Well, and those are things that, and that to me is, it should be a constant authenticity and being truthful,
yeah.
Whether it's going to hurt or not. That's a real challenge. And you'll find that in relationships with anybody. Being truthful and genuine, because, and I heard this, I can't remember where I heard this. I just heard it recently. It was talking about being kind. I think it was a church. And they were talking about how being kind doesn't mean always being nice. Being kind is being truthful and telling someone what they need to hear. Now, it doesn't mean you go tell them off and say it in a hurtful way, but it does mean that you get honest. Yeah. And sometimes you've got to tell people you truly care about something that they may not be ready to hear, may not want to hear. But it's got to be a constant, because if you don't, the enabling and the coddling, you know, and especially with these elite status, high net worth people, like I said before, I cannot imagine how frustrating that must be, to be asking all these people and everyone telling you what they think you want to hear, and you just know that they're all full of shit.
Oh yeah. And kind of like getting caught with your pants on your knees, like, no, man, because this and this and this and this and this is going on. The guy had no idea. And when you have an organization that's so large, sometimes.
Do you know how many employees UFC has?
Hundreds, okay.
I was just curious.
Yeah, hundreds. But if you have something so large, sometimes you don't know what's going on in certain areas of your body, of your organization. Yeah. You think it's working, but it's not. Or it's really under capacity. And that's what this moment was. It was like, wow, I mean, this is like at 10% capacity, not 100, you know. And so just how, you know, oh my gosh, but that happens because, you know, you're trusting other people, you know, to say, yeah, this is good, everything's fine, we're going along. And if you don't hear any disruption, you just assume that everything is going okay, you know what I mean? And you're not, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? So
mm-hmm.
There I was. He just happened to ask, Neil, if he would have asked me about the food or how's the weather in Texas, or, you know, how the boys are, but he didn't ask that. Yes. So I think God wanted that to have, you know, just, he asked the question that, like, I lit him up. So anyway, it was a good thing. It's been a positive thing, but being assertive, not aggressive, but being assertive is great. Like you said, being truthful, being genuine. People love the truth. The truth has mm-hmm. a certain ring to it. It always does, man. You know, even working with killers and all the people that I've worked with in the federal system. So yeah, it's the truth has a certain ring to it. And if you speak the truth and you speak the facts, that's a real good foundation.
Yeah, I think people underestimate the power of just being genuine and really just going out of your way to be real about stuff. And I want to make sure I say this the right way, but the thing I hear the most that my friends and the people who I'm connected with and work with and spend time around, the thing that they always tell me that they appreciate the most is, and they always just tell me that I've always been real with them. And it's, I love hearing that because that's all I want to be. I don't want there to be any question about who I am and how I'm going to respond and how I'm going to treat you and whether I'm going to show up or whether I'm going to do what I say. I just want people to know. And so I go way out of my way to make sure people know that. Mm-hmm. And I always hear people talk about, well, if I knew more people, if I was just connected. When is the last time you asked someone, when was the last time you asked if you could buy somebody coffee? Because I ask at least probably 2-3 people that per week, and then I do it. Mm-hmm. And I've made so many good friends, mm-hmm. like people I love and people that are huge in my life, just by meeting them and recognizing I want to know more about them and telling them, hey, I'd love to get to know you more. Let's have coffee.
And look at the network you've built in the last year.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
It's very insane.
I just got here. You know what? The 18th was a year. I've only been back in DFW for 12 months.
Wow.
And I've made, I'm probably 10 lifelong friends. Wow. And I mean that. These are lifelong friends. And it's just because we connected. I saw, you know, something there and I wanted, and I invested in that. Mm-hmm. And they did the same. That's the other thing. You find some really good people there.
And you made the time for it.
Absolutely.
You made the time for it.
You need to sacrifice your time for other people. And to add to that, you need to understand that sometimes you're not going to get that time back and you're going to lose it. Like I've met with some people who I was really disappointed in how they ended up being, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But that's life. Mm-hmm. How else are you going to know?
Yeah.
Sure as hell don't want to enter a business deal with them and find out that way.
Right.
You know?
Right. But. Right. And I've had a few of those meetings this year myself where, yeah, got to meet the folks and this really wasn't quite the fit that, you know, for us to continue onward, you know, I mean, I'm talking about, you know, folks that basically in the recovery community, stuff like that, you know what I mean? Just like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine. People say that about me too. Probably more so than the other way.
That could be another conversation too. Okay with people not being okay with you.
I got job A, baby.
At least you got job A.
I got job A.
Those 20, 30 guys in your phone.
And the guys in my phone and my family. Yeah. And right. And God and prayer and coffee instead of a protein drink. But anyway, I know.
I do both.
Yeah. I've been practicing in your daily affairs in terms of that and networking and growth and meeting people and, you know, getting, you know, your message out there, and doing it in a way that's just, it's just super cool, super clean. It's not overdone. It's
Thank
not
you.
Extra. It's not annoying.
No, I'm not. Yeah. I'm glad. Thank you for saying that. 'Cause that's the last thing I want to be.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that stuff.
Yeah, man. Everybody. But if you think about it, you know, people. How are we doing on time? 5 minutes.
We got a few minutes. Yeah.
You know, but people will equate being honest you know, a program of rigorous honesty or whatever with some sort of negative, you know, like, oh, that guy's super honest and tells it like it is. Like, that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Look, obviously, we have to work on our delivery, and you know, delivery is everything. Well, not everything, but most of it is how you deliver that message.
Yeah.
But, you know, so a lot of people are kind of raised to please, placate, try to reflect, gaslight, or whatever, you know what I mean, just to try to get on people's good side. Just like that situation I talked about earlier. Wouldn't you want to be on that guy's good side? Yeah, man, I'm having a great time. Thank you for your help. Oh, my God, sir. Thank you. Da, da, da. And you mean it's just you're in the king's castle and you're just overwhelmed with that, right? I mean, that's the kind of the thinking. Now,
mm-hmm.
I'm not lucky. I didn't search for anything. I didn't have a prod and just start prodding people. But anyway, but guess what? So, you know, I didn't have to do that. And you know, so anyway, I prefer to build relationships on similar character strengths or spiritual gifts or whatever, you know what I mean? And not so much, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Just the mechanics of stuff, but.
Yeah, it's not trying. I think the easy way for me to stay focused on doing that the right way is not think about what can this person do for me, but think about, hey, I want to be a friend of this person and how can I add some value to their life?
Right.
And if I do that, man, I don't manipulate anything.
Right.
And I just enjoy the time.
You know? Right.
There's nothing wrong with just getting together with another person and enjoying each other's company.
Right.
Seeing what you can learn from one.
And then you're branding yourself as you and not company X, Y, or Z. Because if company X, Y, or Z goes away, part of your identity goes away. But if you're branding you, and I've had this talk, and you know what I mean? And we've executed that, and that was the right move to do in the long run. And so.
That's good. That's a good note to end on. Brand yourself. Don't conform to a brand.
Correct.
Of somebody else's.
Correct. Correct. Because you are going to be the one that lasts the test of time. You're going to be the one left holding the bag.
It's a fact. That is a fact.
Trust me. I've had to hold that bag a few times. So.
Yep.
Multiple bags. Different area. You know
what I'm saying? And a trunk full of bags.
Well, not that many, but some pretty hefty lifts here and there, so in my life. But well, folks, there it is, another fantastic show here on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Feel free to come by one of our many other access points, such as the LA Talk Radio website, where all of our shows are archived. The videos are there. The MP4 file is there for you to download. You can view it. And so that's great that it's out there for everything. We're also on Apple Podcast, iHeartRadio, and a few other podcasting aggregates. So we're thankful to be out there to those. And I can be reached on conciergecoach.net. And Neil, what's the rest of our social media and your stuff?
Well, our show is found on Instagram and Facebook. Instagram is concierge_coaches. And on Facebook, it's just Concierge Coaches Show. And you can find me at elevatedlifestyleacademy.com and Elevated Lifestyle Academy on Instagram and Facebook.
Sir, perfecto. So, well then, until next week, we're going to have some exciting gifts coming up and more exciting discussion topics in the areas of recovery. And we may drift off into some UFC fighting and maybe federal crime here in a month. So we got
to keep it interesting.
A few fun detours in the road. So, well, with that, we'll bid everybody a blessed day and afternoon. We'll see you here next time. Take care, everybody.
See you guys.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.